Good morning to Damien.
Morning, Simon. Morning, Jill.
Good morning, Damien.
I'm assuming you're in Barossa.
I am. I'm in my office overlooking the vineyards in Maranga, Barossa Valley.
Oh, do you reckon you could actually pick up your computer and just turn it that way so at least we can see?
Actually, you know,
like, oh, well, I was kind of kidding, but if you can, I'd love to see that.
So if you look out my window there, you'll
see. Oh, beautiful. Oh, it looks like a gorgeous day there as well.
This is good radio. Sorry, listen.
Yeah, it is great radio. That's all right.
See if we can see, but...
They're living vicariously. Well, so it's hot down there at the moment, I take it?
Yeah, yesterday was quite a warm one, and today's going to be a few degrees warmer, so I think we're going to clip 40 degrees, like some dry hot, just before vintage.
Yeah, so when exactly is vintage for you?
We kick off on Wednesday, so we're only a couple of days away from starting whites.
Wow, and so what will you start with?
Well, we're predominantly red, but we have a couple of white varietals. We do one Sauvignon, which is it's actually a blend, Sauvignon based, and that's an aromatic style. So we're kicking off with that one on Wednesday, and then close behind will be a little bit of Grenache Blanc that we use for our Blanc de Blanc sparkling base, and then a little later in the season, our Grenache Blanc will come off for our sort of fuller bodied white wine that we do.
Oh, and that is a beautiful Grenache Blanc, absolutely stunning. So how is actually vintage looking for you this year? We just had Ben Riggs from McLaren Vale on, and he's championing 2023. How's it looking for Barossa?
Look, all in all, it's been a pretty good season. Good. I think, I guess it's an even year, so we expect it to be a good season, and as it seems, it's just sort of playing out quite nicely. We haven't had too much hot weather. This is probably the first that we've had, but it's only a couple of days and we've got a nice change coming tomorrow, so I don't think it's going to do any damage. And we had some nice rain events and sort of quite timely that really helped freshen things up and keep things moving along. Won't be a big year, I think, overall. It'll be down slightly, but what's been encouraging is that, there hasn't really been any sort of significant sort of national disasters, be it fire. Events that, could overall write the whole vintage down for the Australian wine industry. So most regions are probably going to be looking reasonably good. And Barossa is certainly in a very good situation right now as we're about to start vintage.
Yeah, great. And just quickly, when do you start with the reds?
We're probably 3 to 4 weeks off for reds. So I'm expecting it to be probably first week of March.
Right. Okay. Right. Cool.
Okay. Damien, have you, in preparation for a 40-degree day, have you put some water on your vineyards this morning?
Yeah, we've got a bit of vineyard to cover, so it's sort of hard to give everything water just on the night before. But I actually started this morning at 4:30, so I got up nice and early just to run around and check a few blocks. It's a bit painful to get out of bed, but it can be the make or break of some blocks if they come into this hot day and they're somewhat stressed.
Yeah,
and it doesn't take a lot. Just a little bit of water just to sort of help freshen them up, and you've only got to get them through the day, so we're not talking a lot of water, but all of our vineyards have the, the ability to apply supplementary irrigation, so everything, has had a drink sort of within the last 48 hours.
Mm. Yeah, just enough to take the edge off. Look, can we have a chat about your new cellar door? That was actually largely why I wanted to get you on to Sprig. It's probably not that new anymore. I think that you were almost opening last time we had you on the show. But let's walk us through the new cellar door experience, where it is exactly, because it looks absolutely amazing, this whole underground cellar. So talk us through it.
Jill, just before Damien answers that, anyone who wants to have a look at this, it looks unreal on the website. So sharkey.au is the website. So it's tscharke.au. Have a look. It's a really great looking thing. Just to watch along as we're hearing from Damien. So sorry, go for it, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Thanks for directing traffic to our website. Jill, look. There's been a lot of changes that we've had here in terms of the experiences that we offer to guests who visit the Barossa, in particular Sharkey. And one thing that we have noticed is the need to perhaps not only premiumise but intensivise the type of experience that we offer, being a little bit more multi-sensory. And we're in a great place. Our cellar door and space is sort of set amongst the vineyards. And so we've tried to incorporate as much of that as possible. But importantly, move away from a sort of the traditional cellar door experience as it was once known. And, you know, I kind of always sort of seen it as being a little bit dated. It's a bit 90s, the pour and bore sort of a scenario. And the pandemic really forced us to rethink how we went about that, particularly when it went to mandatory seating as a start for some of the experiences. And we realised that we just couldn't deal with the volume of traffic that we once were when we went to seated. But, you know, I guess in turn, given that opportunity where we had to rethink how we were hosting guests who visited, we realised how much more joy they were getting from that experience, because I guess it allowed us to sort of slow down the pace and just give a lot more in that experience. So we in turn ended up having to close our cellar door because we realised that we couldn't just transition from a traditional cellar door space to this sort of more luxury experience that we wanted to offer without doing some major renovations. And so, Jill, we actually, and Simon, we have sort of two spaces where we host guests when they visit, our cellar door, which is today known as the Protagonist. And that is sort of largely 50-50 tastings versus wine by the glass. So we offer a seated experience where people can sort of sit at a large bar with a couple of hosts and we walk them through the wines. That is also quite multi-sensory, and we put a fair bit of effort into that experience, particularly the stemware and the presentation of the wines. And then we're finding there's a lot more people who just want to come and have a glass of wine and don't necessarily want to have to be sit there and listen to someone talk to them about wine. And so we offer half glass and wines by the bottle, and that's either dining inside, you know, seated inside or outside amongst the gardens overlooking the vineyards. And then what we've really seen, which has been a massive opportunity for us, is recognising luxury experiences, this space, which is just it's a bit of a phenomenon where people just want to have something that's different, unique, and authentic. And we're fortunate with our underground cellar that we have a bar that overlooks the space where we age all of our wines in amphora and oak and concrete. And down here we give a much more immersive experience in wine, which is fairly philosophically based, but it gives people a great intimate experience in perhaps the creation of the wines and the inspiration behind the wines.
It's absolutely stunning. If you look at the pictures, now that everyone's been directed to the website, it's absolutely gorgeous. And I love the style of, because I think you're right, it's one thing to go and taste wines, and that's awesome for people who want to try your new vintages or people who haven't tried the wines before. It's a great introduction. But sometimes after you've been maybe to already to that day, or you don't feel like, you know, smashing your palate, you just want to sit down and have a nice glass of wine. Offering a completely separate sort of area in that bar experience is beautiful. So are you doing the food? I'm assuming you're serving some form of food there, whether it be platters or whatever. What's the go?
We're actually not doing food, Jill.
Okay.
There's enough cellar doors that sort of have warned us off sort of entering down that path and the challenge that come with doing food service. We're very fortunate as well with our location, the proximity that we have to other venues that offer food. The Louise across the road, giving those guys a plug, they've got a space, Contours, which is what they do, burgers and incredible food. So we kind of thought we'd stick to what we know, and wine and wine knowledge is our strength. But one thing that we, you know, certainly can't be dismissive of is that the Barossa is full of amazing wine. And for the most part, Australia does wine exceptionally well. And what we're finding is that people who are visiting these destinations, be it the Barossa or other wine regions, it's not, you know, I guess to seek out and try and find great wines, but it's to be immersed in the culture of a wine region, to sort of live and breathe what winemaking is all about, but also to want, you know, for a lot of people it's a great pastime. There's a fascination around wine and people want to learn about wine, and wine's been around for about 8,000 years and it's evolving. It's probably evolving today faster than ever before, given a lot of the pressures that we're having to work under, be it climate change or mega trends, globalization. And so what we're finding is it's not a matter of just pouring some wine in a glass and sending people away and there you've experienced Sharky or this is Barossa, but it's more about enabling people to have those experiences that they're really seeking when they come to the region. So for us, importantly, as much as it is about the wine, it's also more about everything else that sort of surrounds the delivery of that wine, and that is that information space in which we can provide that.
It's like the whole sensory experience, and you're really delivering on that beautifully.
It's also that creates a memorable link to your brand for people, you know, and a romantic kind of association, I guess.
I love the romance, the word romantic, Simon. It's so important, that emotive connection to a brand, and I think that's, you know, what sets one brand apart from the next. Yep. It seldomly comes down to really the wine itself. It's the experiences that people can associate with that wine. So when they are sitting at home and having a bottle of your wine, and they're not influenced by that environment, at least they can feel emotionally enriched, because it can take them back to the good times that they had when they were visiting.
When they were there, yeah, absolutely.
And it is so true. I mean, you think how many times, like, you've been in a dinner party or wherever, and someone's talking about, you know, I had this beautiful wine, but they can't quite remember where it was from or what it was called. They probably remember the region, but they can't remember it. But if there was, coming off the back of an experience like yours, they would remember everything about it. And it does make that difference in an industry where there is a lot of great stuff on offer to really be able to differentiate it. That's that is so important to do.
Absolutely. Hey, Damien, we've got a couple of questions from listeners, and regarding vineyards, really. So the first one is from Christopher, and he's talking about the three vineyards that contribute to your wines. Does the Shiraz fruit from each vineyard get fermented separately?
Yeah, it not only gets fermented separately, but it's also, each of the vineyards give rise to different strengths. Some vineyards, Shiraz vineyards, can be more about structure, more fruit, some fragrance. And so, importantly, we've identified the terroirs and the characteristics that we get from these different sites. And so we tend to try and optimize the harvest dates to sort of capture the essence of what those different vineyards can contribute. And then in the winery, not only are they made and fermented, I should say, separately, but you'll see even on the vessels in which we're making the wines that we'll identify it being, you know, a parcel that contributes to fragrance and one that will contribute to fruit or body, and perhaps and one more structure, so that it's very front of mind that when we're making these different components that go into this blend that we create, that we're adopting sort of winemaking practices that help accentuate those strengths in those different vineyards.
That's interesting. Then the other one is from Kim, asking, so the Laird, so previously Malcolm Seppelt's vineyard, so it's very close to your Nadenfrei vineyard. Could you talk to the similarities of those two vineyards at all?
Well, for the most part, our vineyards are predominantly all situated in Maranenga. And if I just look at that as a sort of a sub-appellation of Barossa as a whole, we're located on the western ridge of Barossa Valley. And the advantage of that is we don't have the rich, deep alluvial soils of the Barossa. So it's a much lower yielding appellation as a whole, but also the varying sort of aspects that we have as well. So our Gnadenfrei vineyard and the Laird vineyard are sort of in the heart of Maranenga, predominantly either south or southeasterly facing. So it's a lovely aspect. Both vineyards, I mean, particularly one that we have, which is next to the Laird vineyard, we also grow Shiraz, as it turns out. And just a very low yielding site, incredible sort of meso climate, which is attributed to Maranenga itself, the geography and those aspects.
Mm. Oh, thank you. That's hopefully, guys, that answers the question or questions. So obviously you're starting this week, starting vintage, and it goes through, till the end of March then, I suppose, for the Reds.
I guess it depends on how you define vintage and what it encompasses. But, our harvesting will be pretty much wrapped up by the end of March. But as you can appreciate, there's still plenty of work that will carry on after the last parcel of fruit that comes off, in terms of what's happening in the winery. All of our wines, I guess the winemaking is quite an intensive process, given that none of our wines rely on really oak to help, or the cellar to help build the structure. So a lot of extended sort of maceration that we do during vintage as well. So, the winery will carry on sort of working right through to the end of April.
So Grenache seems to be probably more of your flagship varietal. It's used in lots of the blends and the whites and the reds. So how much plantings of Grenache do you have?
Last year, Grenache represented 65% of our crush. So we probably still have a slightly more area planted to Shiraz than we do Grenache. But the remarkable thing and the exciting thing about Grenache is it's much more suited to arid conditions, and therefore, you know, like for like in terms of quality, you can probably carry better yields, or I should say higher yields. I shouldn't say better, but higher yields than what we can with in comparing it with Shiraz. So as a result, we harvest more Grenache than we do Shiraz fruit. And given Grenache's versatility as a varietal in terms of the wine styles we can make, everything from rosé through to those heavier, sort of more complex aging Grenache styles, we can produce a lot of different wines using Grenache as opposed to Shiraz.
Yeah, and with your Grenache Blanc, would it be right to say that you were one of the first to be producing Grenache Blanc in Barossa?
Oh, look. Yeah, straight Grenache Blancs. We're definitely one of the earlier adopters, I guess, of this variety, and planting sort of more commercial plantings. I mean, my grandfather, we had Grenache Blanc in some of the older Grenache plantings, sort of more rogue vines grown amongst the Grenache Noir. But certainly today, given our focus on Grenache, it was a kind of an easy decision to sort of go down that path, and looking to produce a white that perhaps isn't so much aromatic based but more structurally based, it was an obvious choice.
Now you're organic, certified organic, the vineyard. Do you reckon that has any effect, or how long's that been, by the way, like that you've been working on that?
Yeah, sure, Simon. We've been practicing organics for over 10 years now, but fully certified in organic in 2019, and then a year later in certified in biodynamic as well. I guess for us it wasn't really trying to find a point of difference or a niche market. It was really just understanding the harsh reality of grape growing. It's an intensive industry. There's a lot of inputs, and some of the tools that we've relied on over the last few decades, particularly when it comes to herbicides and fungicides, they're failing. And so we're seeing a lot of growers relying on much higher rates of having to use some of these synthetic inputs to have the same, outcome in trying to control some of those challenges that we have with pests and diseases, and it's not working. So we were really having to be, looking towards a more harmonious, perhaps, approach to grape growing that didn't rely on us relying so heavily on these inputs, which are, not only bad for the environment, but also our own well-being in terms of, them turning up in the wine as well.
Yeah. Do you find, as a winemaker and obviously, I guess, partaking in cellar door experience for people, do you have a lot of consumers talking to you about how important it is for them that a wine is either organic, biodynamic, or even vegan? Or do you find it's not really something that really comes up and really, really bothers people once they're there in cellar door?
Look, generally speaking, in Australia, I don't think it comes up as much because, in all fairness, there's not a huge difference in taste. If I compare it to the Northern Hemisphere and some of the areas where it's colder and wetter and there's perhaps more disease pressures, there's a bit of a stigma with some organic wines being and tasting significantly different to conventionally made wines because you see obvious issues perhaps or a compromise on wine quality. But in Australia, be it organic or non-organic, there's no real compromise necessarily found on wine quality. In terms of preference for wine drinking, I don't think we're quite there yet in Australia in terms of the mega trends, and it's certainly happening a lot faster in particularly in Europe than what we're seeing in Australia. With respect to the conversation and when we talk about it being organic, I think it's ticking another box and people are pleasantly surprised and glad that it is. The only time it might come up where people ask about it or they're seeking out organic wines is that there are some consumers who, they believe that they have, these wines have less sulfur and perhaps they have less side effects when drinking wine, an organic wine versus a conventionally made wine.
Yeah.
And we touched on that with Ben Riggs earlier, off the back of a discussion I had yesterday with someone who really is not handling the red wine as well as they used to. So as in, it gives them a headache. And so the question was, is there a reason? But look, I think it's in general we're here, even if wineries aren't organic, certified organic or biodynamic, people are more so moving to the principles of it, even if they're not pushing for the certification and that really strict, the rigidity of having to maintain that certification. But in general, vineyard health and plant health gives you better wine, right?
No question. The healthier vines produce the best wines. So plant vitality is first and foremost. If you're serious about producing great wines, you need to have healthy vineyards. The plant starts to stress, it's not going to give you the productivity and certainly the quality. But also, I think, you know, for a lot of growers that aren't necessarily organic, but are perhaps heading more down that path, no one uses any of these inputs because it's recreational and we enjoy doing it. I think it's more out of need basis. And as we build on our knowledge and understanding of a lot of the pests and diseases that we're working with, it's empowering us to be able to, you know, reduce our reliance perhaps on a lot of those inputs, as opposed to the old mentality, well, we'll just spray it as an insurance policy because we can afford to. Costs are real, you know, a lot of growers are putting under extreme amount of pressure in terms of their inputs and costings. And so a lot of those inputs are being wound back. And I guess we're becoming more and more skeptical about, you know, are they safe? And, you know, what are those residual limits in wines having on our, not only on our health, but also the longevity of our vineyards and the health of our soils.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly as I said, it's something that we just really see happening more and more. That people are conscious of the fact. It's in a similar way that people, winemakers are these days much more keeping vineyards and parcels of fruit separate as opposed to co-fermenting, you know, across various blocks, you know, whereas once that did happen, didn't it?
Yeah. What I love about the wine industry is that unique expression of people and places and moving away from just the commercial application of winemaking, be it, it's just the Shiraz or the Barossa. Are we understanding more the details and the opportunities to be had in capturing the essence of the terroir, the provenance, that these wines should speak of a place and a time and the people that are behind their creation?
Yeah, and you spoke of it before about the, you know, Maranenga region, you know, sub-region. So you start breaking a region down into sub-regions and then from there you go into vineyards and then blocks. You know, I think consumers are becoming more and more aware of or interested, I suppose, in, you know, understanding that more and trying to notice the nuances themselves.
Simon, there's also, I guess, people are trying to understand what is it that defines a great wine? Is it a clever story? Is it a hero winemaker? Is it, you know, is it a price point? Is it the packaging? And I think when you distill it all down, it really is trying to have some integrity in terms of that label, that wine, or the producer being able to demonstrate the origin of that wine, that this wine comes from those vineyards. It gives almost the wine producer more credibility in terms of the transparency in being able to say, we grew the grapes here, this is how we grew the grapes, and this is the wine that we've created for you to enjoy. Where in the past, most of it was, you know, the system's probably been more reliant on fruit grapes being a commodity, you know, and it's graded in terms of a classification system. Really expensive fruit goes into more new oak, and, you know, that's a more expensive wine, and it's from Barossa. Mm. McLaren Vale. And so that sort of lacked a bit of integrity. And I think that old model of just treating a region and a grape as a commodity and the wine producer is more the hero, I think it's sort of eroding away quite quickly. And consumers appreciate the integrity of a brand and a producer who can really demonstrate traceability on where that wine comes from. I think ultimately, look at some of the greatest producers in the world, particularly in the old world, wine producing countries. Most of those great exceptional wines that have been around for almost centuries now, we know it stems down to the particular origin of those vineyards, the vines, the rose itself, and where those wines come from.
Mm. Ancestry.com for wine. But it is. It is actually very serious. Look, Damien, just before we totally wrap, just very quickly, I think earlier you mentioned that your Grenache Blanc you used for a Blanc de Blanc.
Yes.
I haven't seen your sparkling, so just can you just quickly tell us about that and where can we get it, because I can't see it on your website.
Well, you can't get it, Jill. I'm sorry.
what a shame. Cellador only.
No, not even that. We haven't released our first one yet. So it's a project that we started 4 years ago. And so we've got four vintages in the cellar, aging on lees. And we'll do our first disgorgement, we hope, this winter. So all things being equal, we'll release our first vintage, the 2020, later this year.
Will there be much of it?
We're trying to limit it to between 1,000 and 1,500 bottles a year. We're doing everything in-house, so it's a fairly labour-intensive process, and it's more a passion of love. You know, when it comes to winemaking, there's probably no more romantic process of winemaking than Method Champenoise, and so it's a lovely sort of pet project that we have here in the team that I work with, but it's not something that we want to sort of commercialise, let's say, and make it too big. So we're going to keep it limited, Simon, so just between 1,000 and 1,500 bottles a year.
Wow. So I can't wait to try that one.
If that's piqued anyone's interest, then they can presumably go to the website and sign up to the newsletter, and that'll give the heads up.
Yeah. So, yeah, that the release of that one will be exclusively to our database.
Yep. There we go. Another reason to go to sharky.au, hey? Hey, good luck with Vintage. It's busy it's going to be, a lot of work. Have you got some vintage workers and some internationals that have come back?
We've got a little team. We're only a small team, but we did have Pedro. He's a winemaker from Portugal. He turned up last Monday on our doorstep here. So he just arrived last weekend. And he's doing his forklift course this week. And sadly, he'll miss out on the first day of harvest because he'll be undertaking a two-day training to get his forklift license. But, aside from him, it's just our regular crew.
Well, have a great time. Enjoy the beers at the end of the day.
Yeah, vintage is a great time of the year. Everybody thinks it must be hectic and busy and stressful for everyone. And it is, you know, long days, but there's certainly a wonderful buzz that happens with vintage. And because everyone thinks you're so busy, they tend to leave you alone. So I'm kind of spared in the office and I get to do what I love, and that's being sort of out in the vineyards and amongst the action in the winery.
Nice.
Good one.
And look, as long as Radiohead's still on your side, then it'll get you to anything, won't it? Yeah,
it's a bit of a thrashing in the winery. So. Thanks, guys.
Great. Thanks, Damien. Have a good day.